T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Well, hi again, everyone. I'm 1010 Wins Sports Director Mark Renee. This is On the Mark, and our guest today is Rachel Balkovitz. Over the winter, she became the first female full-time hitting coach hired by a Major League Baseball franchise. And friends, it's not just any franchise. Rachel, it's the New York Yankees. First of all, thank you for joining me. And how are you faring in this very strange time in all of our lives?
I'm faring just about the same way that I fare in any strange time, which is pretty good. I think we were kind of talking offline, just keeping everything in perspective. And there's plenty of people that are much worse off than myself. And I'm doing well. You know, I'm just taking advantage of some time that I wouldn't normally have. And I didn't really have an off season this year. I was doing my research at Driveline Baseball in Seattle, and so this feels a bit like the off season, although it's strange that it's obviously in May. But I'm just trying to get better any way that I can away from the field. So
how difficult has it been for you to stay in touch with your the folks that you coach in hitting via, you know, these social media platforms and Zoom and Microsoft Teams and other methods like that, as opposed to face-to-face and hand-to-hand?
Well, you know, kids these days, and I'm just old enough to say that, but kids these days do really well on social media platforms. And so they do really well at texting. They do really well at Instagram and all that stuff. And so I think that they're probably more okay with it than even being in person talking sometimes. So it's been difficult, obviously, because there's only so much you can do through texting and video exchange and such. And I got on a phone call with a guy this morning in the minor leagues that we just talked about a book he was reading and, you know, what he's doing with some school in this time where he's trying to finish up some classes. So it's been easier than you'd think, I think, personally, just because those guys prefer probably to text and to I actually kind of gave a guy the other day, he was like, he was supposed to call me, didn't call. And then he texted me on Twitter. I'm like, of course. I said, I texted him back on Twitter. I'm like, oh yeah, no problem. You ghost me on the phone, but you'll DM me on Twitter. So that's just kind of how they communicate anyway, which is convenient for us because they'll send video and, you know, they'll send me something through Instagram. So it's okay. You know, not ideal, but it's okay.
Tell the folks, if you don't mind, I don't want to go through your entire life story because
it's, we don't have time.
I'm sure it's, well, and I know you're pressed for time, but tell us basically what the path was for you to a job as a hitting coach with the Yankees.
Well, and it is a long story. So just to give the audience a little bit of context, is I've actually moved 15 times in the past 14 years, just kind of chasing my career around more or less. The long story short is I grew up in Omaha, Nebraska and played softball competitively. So softball ended up taking me to the University of New Mexico where I finished up my career there. I ended up doing, again, long story short, a long string of internships, did a graduate assistantship at LSU working with their baseball and softball, tennis, women's basketball teams as a strength and conditioning coach. So I actually started out as a strength and conditioning coach. And shortly after I left LSU, I did an internship for the St. Louis Cardinals and their rookie league team with Johnson City Cardinals. And I another long story short, sat a year out of baseball in 2013 and then was hired full-time as a strength and conditioning coach in 2014 by the Cardinals. So they actually hired me as their minor league strength and conditioning coordinator. So I was overseeing all of the minor leagues. I was overseeing 10, you know, male strength coaches, 250 athletes, helping the major league strength coach with anything he needed. Was there for 2 years. And then I finished my strength and conditioning career for 3 years with the Astros as their Latin American strength and conditioning coordinator, then the AA strength coach. Then I quit and went back to school, moved to Europe. So I did a second master's degree in biomechanics and statistics in Europe for a year. While I was there, I was working with the Netherlands national baseball and softball team as a hitting coach, but I was full-time student. I was, you know, more or less interning for the national teams there as much as I could in the cages, and then moved to Seattle to do my research in eye tracking for hitters at Driveline Baseball. And then while I was at Driveline, the Yankees hired me as a minor league hitting coach. And I guess an important detail is I worked with the current minor league hitting coordinator, Dylan Lawson, for 3 years with the Astros. So we had known each other for 3 years with the Astros. We had become, you know, friends. He was a mentor of mine and taught me a lot about hitting, and all the hitting coaches there, honestly, were some of my closest friends. And I just learned so much listening to them talk and understand the human body. And I was even teaching some of the hitting principles, the swing principles that they were teaching. I was teaching them in the weight room, because I always say this, like, the body doesn't act differently in the weight room than it does in the cages. Right. So I was coaching some of the swing movements in the weight room with rotation and hip hinge and those kinds of things. So Dylan knew me previously, and then he also knew that I went back to school and was working as a hitting coach in the Netherlands and doing my research in eye tracking for hitters. And so for him, it was kind of a no-brainer looking at my resume. So that's kind of how I ended up with the Yankees. That's still a long story short, by the way.
Right. Yeah. So I know ears across the area perked up when you mentioned the Houston Astros. And I just want to get on the record and have you put on the record that minor league hitting coordinators are not teaching Astros batters how to steal signs.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I was just talking to a friend of mine from the Astros the other day, and it's funny how you get associated with something like that. And I mean, we have no idea. We had no idea anything that's going on. We're kind of in some ways pretty separate, especially in season. Everyone gets a little bit siloed into their own minor league affiliate. And so, right. You know, I guess 2017, I was in the Dominican Republic coaching our 16-year-old babies that just signed in Latin America, you know, while all that was going on. So I clearly had no idea what was going on. And yeah, I definitely was not a part of the teaching of sign stealing, if that was even, you know, who knows what all was happening. So.
Okay. Well, as a hitting coach, I think you could speak to this with some authority, because it seems to me that when a batter is getting locked in to face a pitcher who is throwing upwards of 100 miles an hour, that if there is some signal, whether it's a noise or a lack of noise, that any batter, especially at an upper level ability-wise, is so locked in that when you start making some noises before a pitch comes in, I don't know how much of an impact that's going to have. That's just me. I think you could speak to it certainly with much more credibility than I can. I mean, is it likely that if I make a noise as somebody's getting ready to hit a pitch, they'll be able to very quickly adjust to whatever pitch they think is coming?
You know, I just speak broadly. I don't even like it's, I'm not even talking about the Astros anymore, really. Just broadly, like if you, you can train anything, you know, you can literally train anything. And so, especially if you're a high level athlete and you have some kind of outside stimulus, I mean, that's just like these guys are reacting to ball flight that's happening, you know, over the course of 500 milliseconds, or really realistically, probably 400 milliseconds as it's coming to the plate. So, the ball out of the hand of the pitcher, depending on how hard he's throwing, they have 400 milliseconds to react to that. So they could probably react to just about anything if they worked on it. And actually the humans in general, I mean, just think about how quickly you would react to if somebody pulled out in front of you, you know, at an intersection. We all have these actually innate, extremely fast reflexes.
Right.
So I'm speaking kind of from a hitting coach perspective, but also just from like human performance that I've been in for 10 years, like, yeah, everyone can react very quickly. But we somehow think that it's only, you know, it's siloed just to professional athletes. It's actually a innate ability of like humankind. And it's something that's wired in us just thinking about from like a survival perspective. So that was a really broad way of saying that, yeah, they probably could react to it.
I'm glad you had that take. You kind of set me straight, because I've apparently been under the mistaken impression that it was next to impossible. I want to get back to what happened to the world back in the middle of March, just over 2 months ago now. Spring training had begun. You were firmly entrenched with the Yankees in Tampa. And I'm wondering, when we find out in the middle of an exhibition game that the Yankees are playing on a Thursday afternoon, that after that day's games, baseball is being shut down until further notice, when word started to filter to wherever you were that day, what was the first thing that went through your mind? Or were you already expecting that that would probably be how things played out?
Yeah, we, you know, the NBA had been canceled and like March Madness and all that stuff. So I just felt like it was just a matter of time. And honestly, you know, I don't know. I take the same perspective on this that I take on everything else. And I don't want to be insensitive to people out there, as we were talking offline a little bit about what's going on with your family situation. But, you know, this is just it's a social experiment. Like, what do we do when things get tough? What do we do when our environment changes, when our circumstances change, when our financial situation changes? You know, what do you do? And I've been in a lot of situations where I've been broke. I've been discriminated against. I've been held out of the game. I've had, you know, time alone. I've had time where, you know, I'm alone literally, where I'm not around other people for a long amount of time. I'm alone figuratively, where I'm around people, but no one can understand what I'm saying, or I can't relate to people. And I've been through depression. I've been through a lot of things. And so it's just, I take the same view that I take on anything else, is like, you know, you allow yourself to some time to process. But then pretty quickly after this all went down, it's like, all right, how can I help? I started a GoFundMe where I can donate resources to COVID relief. And I'm asking people to donate with me. I'm thinking of how I can communicate with the players. I'm texting them. I text them videos of myself throwing batting practice. I text them videos of myself working out, and then they reciprocate. They text me the same thing. It's really just like chaos management. But the only difference with this time period is that now everyone is going through it. Like, in some way, right. We are all affected by this. Some people are more affected than others. Some people are affected more negatively than others. I feel like this is just an opportunity for growth. And you know, when you look at things a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times when something difficult happens, 5 years from that point, you look back and you go, wow, that was actually really good. You know, I was out of my job, but I spent so much time with my family, and I got to see my kids going through their schoolwork, and I got to help them, and we got to sit down to dinner every night, whatever that is for you. You know, you look back and you think, wow, that was something, the best thing that ever happened to me. I'm talking to several friends that are like, you know what? I didn't even like my job that much. In fact, I hated it. And I was just doing it because it was a steady paycheck. And now I lost my job, and I started this new company, and it's the best thing that ever happened to me. But if it hadn't happened, we wouldn't, you know, be forced into this growth period. So I just, for myself personally, the way that I handle it is the same way that I handle any other difficult time in my life, is just like, I try to, as fast as possible, right? You allow time for processing or grieving or whatever might be going on for you, but as fast as possible, I just try to think like, all right, what are the amazing benefits that are going to come out of this time for me personally and also for the world?
That is a very interesting way, and I think an effective way of looking at things. I want to take you back, if you don't mind, to spring training. And as we said, about a month in, with just a couple of weeks until opening day was supposed to be coming, your first spring training with the Yankees in a full-time capacity. I'm wondering, what were your impressions of your first spring training?
I mean, the Yankees organization is just phenomenal. I don't need to tell everyone the history of the organization, of course, and the tradition that exists there, and just some of the people. You know, you look at Brian Cashman, like, he's a genius. Like he's just this mastermind of a baseball mind. And, you know, to be in an organization that's been run so well for so long is incredible. But I think the more impressive thing is just the way that they're still chasing edges and being progressive. And obviously I'm a very obvious, you know, progressive hire, but there's been plenty of progressive hires within the organization. When you talk about even my boss, Dylan Lawson, coming from a very non-traditional baseball background. Well, I mean, he's been in baseball for a long time in college setting. But having been in professional baseball for only really two seasons and getting this job, and Sam Breen coming from driveline baseball from a more research background, biomechanics background, and even human performance background. And so, and those are just a couple of people. I mean, the organization is stocked with progressive hires, thinking differently, chasing edges, doing things a little different, looking from a different perspective. So it's even more impressive when you think about an organization that's so, so traditional and that's still like going after it full speed ahead, trying to get that edge. So I think it's just, I've been massively impressed with the organization itself. And even in this downtime, we've had, of course, Zoom calls and meetings and different like thought exercises. And so, I mean, I still feel like I'm learning a lot from them every day. And I mean, I can't wait to get back at it.
Yeah. To that end, what are you hearing? You know, we're hearing in New York that, you know, hopefully there is some semblance of a season that might start in early July, whether or not there are fans in the seats, which doesn't seem likely at this point, not only in New York, but most of the other major league cities. We had heard rumors a couple of weeks ago that some of the Yankee minor league operations were being put on standby and ready to rev up at a moment's notice. What kind of things have you been hearing coming out of Tampa and New York?
You know what? I'm hearing the same thing that everyone else is. I don't know. I don't think I have much more information than the public. So what you know is what I know. And, you know, I'm hearing the same thing about rumblings of a season starting early July, but that's not, you shouldn't quote me on that. It's just what I'm hearing, you know, from the public and from what I'm reading in the news and such. And so I think that sometimes I think the public is the first to know. So
your bags aren't necessarily packed and ready to go to the airport at the drop of a hat.
I am ready to get back quickly at any time. But yeah, I'm not packed up today.
I wanted to ask, because it's funny, you talk about how the Yankees traditionally, you know, perhaps most buttoned up operation, at least from a public perspective, in the history of sports, is so progressive. And yet baseball in and of itself is not exactly the most progressive of sports. We know fans who are, you know, still adamant that there shouldn't be night games at Wrigley Field, or there shouldn't be artificial turf, or folks like me who, you know, think interleague play should be banned and never should have happened in the first place. But, you know, as a woman and a full-time hitting coach, I'm wondering what has been the reaction from the players toward you?
You know, this is the third time I've been hired by a major league organization full time, and my seventh spring training. And, it's the same every time. You know, there's probably some curiosity, and there might be some guys who don't really want to talk to me that much, especially at first. But I think it's just like anything else. Once you get to know me, I mean, look, I played softball through Division I. I have the arm pain to prove it. I wake up with a numb arm a lot of days, and you know, I had the yips. I struggled in my career. I can relate to them in ways that I don't think they understand that I can. And you don't know that until you get to know me. You know, I've lived right all over the world. I've lived all over the country. I've slept on couches. I've done the whole, you know, traveling, chasing your dream career. And I do think, again, I can relate to them a lot better than they probably think. And it just takes a little time for them to understand that. It also takes a little time for them to see how I interact, you know, the whole, you know, can I handle the dugout chatter? And am I going to get upset if somebody slips an F word, which is funny to think about, because usually I'm worried about my language more than they should be worried about their language, you know? So I was a catcher. I was, you know, spitting and in the dugout myself. So I think it's just a little allowing them a grace period to get to know me. And once they do, it's like, oh, you've worked in baseball for 6 years. I understand the human body. I basically teach literally everything that Dylan has taught. And so I have like the hitting philosophies down. You know, I think it's, I give them a little time. You know, I wasn't that good at that at first. I was like, what's wrong with that guy? How come he's not, how come that conversation was a little awkward or whatever? And I would get kind of defensive. And now I'm just like, you know what? It's change. I don't like change. You don't like change. Nobody likes change. Right. There's always an adjustment period to any kind of change in your life. And I just have to realize that I'm the change. So just allow them a little time to get to know me. And usually any kind of, you know, awkwardness or unwillingness to work with me or whatever, that falls away pretty quickly. It's not years, you know, it doesn't take years. It takes them a couple of weeks to figure out that I'm going to walk into a room and be able to speak confidently and be able to coach them and be able to offer them things that could help them. And, you know, does it take more time than say a guy who played in the big leagues and then is a coach? Of course it does. But I don't envy people like that. I don't envy people that maybe don't have to earn it as much as I do. If I have to earn it a little extra, if I have to do extra work to earn it, I don't mind that. That's an advantage, you know, for me. I have to earn everything I get. And so it means more to me when, you know, I don't know what it is during this COVID time. I've had so many players reach out to me from the past during COVID. I think, I don't know, it's, they've got a lot of downtime or something, but it means so much more because I know I had to earn that respect. Right. I had to earn that. I didn't just walk into a room and get it, and it means a lot to me. And so I don't envy that. So I think it's fine. I think it's fine if guys don't want to work with me, like, let me earn it. You know, I prefer that. So good. They don't want to work with me. Okay, fine. They'll get to know me and they'll get to understand what I can bring. And then that's even better, you know?
And because baseball is such a transient game, players don't stay in one place anymore. They move up in levels. They move from organization to organization. And you've been now with three. What have you noticed in terms of the growth of your credibility? Do you find that it's been a glacial sort of evolution? Or as you begin working with the Yankees, for instance, have guys been coming up to you and saying, oh, I am friends with so-and-so from either the Cardinals or the White Sox or the Astros, and you've, you know, word of mouth has been good, and they're giving you props as they socialize. Is that happening?
Yeah. I mean, just in general, the longer I'm in, the more, you know, the more credibility there is. I don't know if it's, I mean, I'm sure sometimes it's a good thing. Sometimes it's a bad thing. I think the one thing, whether the players have liked me over the years or not, I think the one thing they can probably agree on is that I'll work my ass off for them and I'll hold them to a high standard. Whether they like that high standard or not, it's probably up in the air.
Right.
But yeah, I think that word of mouth and people going, oh, I saw you worked with the Astros or I saw you did this or, you know, I think just, like you said, it's less glacial than before, but it's still glacial sometimes. And players will ask me like, so how are you liking spring training? And I'm like, well, this is my seventh one. So it's pretty much the same as all the others. it's, you know, they're kind of getting to know like, oh, she's been around the game for a while. And I think there is some word of mouth. And I think more than ever this time around, I just, because it's more in the media now than it ever has been. I mean, when I got in the game 2014, nobody gave a nobody was, you know, I didn't even have an Instagram. And I think I got interviewed like twice and I was the first ever, you know, full-time strength coach female in the history of baseball. No one cared. But now the society has kind of changed where women in sports and female sports in general are just getting a lot more coverage and visibility. And so this time around feels a little bit more like guys, they've heard my story about being discriminated against and how many times I've had to move and all these things. And so they strangely are kind of giving me respect even just for that. They're like, oh yeah, I read a story on you. Like, that's kind of cool. That's crazy that you had to go through that. So that's the first time that's happening. And I think, you know, like you said, it's gaining a bit of momentum and that's a good question. No one has ever asked me that before, but yeah, I think it is a little bit easier this time around.
I don't know why nobody asked you that question. That was one of the first things I wanted to ask, but I had to warm you up a little bit first. Now, the Yankees have had over the years a couple of women in assistant general manager positions. Yeah. Kim Ng, Jean Afterman come to mind first and foremost. And we've seen on the NBA level very highly ranked female assistant coaches. Becky Hammon is the first one who comes to mind. Rachel, do you think Major League Baseball, if not today, will sometime in the next, I don't know, it's 2020, so let's say in the next 10 years, will Major League Baseball be ready for a female base coach, if not a manager?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm not even, that's not even a question. I don't know. It's, I think it's going to happen quickly. You know, you're looking at, like, I just want to, by the way, call to mind or call to the, if in case the audience doesn't know. So I'm a, you know, the first full-time hitting coach, I guess, but there's also like four other women that are in uniform this year in different roles. You've got Rachel Fulden for the Cubs, who's she's a fourth coach and she's running their hitting lab. And I think she's also, she's doing a lot of hitting stuff as well. You've got Tina Whitlock for the Cardinals, who nobody knows about. They've kept that a very good secret, but she's a fourth coach as well. She'll be kind of, I think, sitting in the stands doing some scouting stuff, but also she'll have on-field responsibilities of some kind during practices and whatnot. You got Alyssa Nakin for the Giants in a supportive role as well. And it's going to happen fast. You know, I don't think we're that far off. I think you'll see a minor league manager probably pretty soon. A female minor league manager. I think I think it's going to grow very quickly. And I also would be shocked if in the next 10 years there wasn't a female GM. And you look at Kim Ng, I think she's interviewed for four general manager positions. I don't know about Jean, but I mean, they've been in the game. I just wrote Kim a thank you email like a week ago, just reflecting on all of this. They've been in the game, you know, for decades, literally like from when I was in diapers. And it's crazy to me that there hasn't been a female GM before. So I think it's going to move quickly. I don't know if that's me being optimistic, but I mean, look, I just got hired as a hitting coach. You know, I don't see why other things aren't possible. So yeah, I'm optimistic that there will be one.
All right. Now that the seed is planted, I need to go one step further. Is there a chance before we're all old and gray, or for some of us older and grayer, that Rachel Balkovitz is a major league manager?
Is there a chance? Yes. Am I sure that that's going to happen? No. But is there a chance? I believe it's possible. I don't live my life with a lot of, as you can imagine, I don't live my life with a lot of self-imposed limitations. Yeah, we all have them, but I think I have less than most people. So for me to say that that's not possible, like, I don't believe that. I believe it's possible. Do I know when or if that'll actually happen? No, but I definitely would say that there's a chance.
And it is something that if the opportunity were presented, you would fully embrace.
100%. I think, first of all, I want to say I have a lot of learning to do as a hitting coach. You know, I'm just learning how to throw some good batting practice. So like, I've got a lot of work
That's
to do.
That's the first step, right?
You know, I'm not jumping ahead of myself, but I also know that, you know, the landscape of my future is, you know, I think I'll take on several roles. And I have always, always, always been a leader of sorts. Like, I've always taken to that role since I was young, since I was 12, since I was in high school. I was the one who was keeping people after practice and hitting them extra grounders. And I was, you know, my coach would give the after game talk, and then I would tell everyone to stay and I would give the after game talk. And I was always kind of in this captain role of sorts. And I think that that's something that comes to me, I don't want to say naturally, but I enjoy the pressure. I enjoy the bigger picture and looking at a group of people and being able to get them to work together. And that's something that I would love to do in the future. However, as I said, I have plenty of work to do in the role that I'm in right now. So I'm not really worrying about that at the moment.
And we've seen over the years that catchers especially have been among the best coaches, the best managers. As a former catcher yourself, please tell us, what is it that makes the catchers so adept and so in tune with those responsibilities?
I've thought about that a lot, actually. I don't know if it's that when you're young, you self-select into that role because you are a leader, or that role makes you more of a leader, or both, you know. But when I was a kid, I wanted, you know, all the girls, they didn't want to put on the gear. They didn't want to mess up their hair. And I was the first one to want to do that. And from a very young age, I was a catcher, and all the way up through my college years. And it's like, you got to control the field. You're yelling the outs. You're talking to the pitcher. You're the captain. You're the captain of the ship. And also you just learn, you know, you gotta know what's going on all over the field. You don't just have to worry about, okay, where's my cutoff man? You're like placing the cutoff man. You like, there's so many things that you have to manage in a game. And so I think I'm not sure if leaders self-select into being a catcher, or if catchers are, you know, become leaders through that role. But I definitely, that was an identity for me. Like I loved being a catcher. I loved, you know, the opportunity when shit was going wrong to call timeout and go and talk to the team and give a plan. And that's something that I've always really loved. It looks like I said, I've just really embraced a leadership role basically anywhere that I go. And I think it's natural that you would find a lot of catchers in leadership positions.
Rachel, in the couple of minutes we have left, and I do appreciate your time today. If baseball were to resume its season, given the current circumstances, within the next 6 or 8 weeks, how comfortable would you be getting back on the field and working in close proximity with the players as you usually do?
Oh, I'd be totally fine. I mean, I'm like a young, healthy person with no existing conditions, but also I just firmly believe, like, my background is strength and conditioning, and I'm firmly rooted in, I eat extremely healthy. I get a lot of sleep. My immune system is functioning on all cylinders, and I would just, you know, more obviously washing my hands and taking precautions and social distancing is all important, but also getting sunlight and a lot of sleep and eating your veggies and all that is probably just, it's equally important. You know, it's not like this virus is, it's obviously a deadly virus, but a lot of people are recovering from it. And so even if you did get it, the best thing you can do is, you know, have your immune system in tip top shape and ready to handle it. So I'd feel completely comfortable getting back to practice. I would probably just eat a lot of extra veggies and make sure I'm getting my sleep and just taking care of myself from a health standpoint, and making sure that even if I were to get it, that, you know, it would be something like the flu bug and not anything worse than that.
Right. And if, as we've been hearing for the last couple of months, there is some sort of a major league season, but no minor league ball played this year, what happens to you?
I don't know. I don't know. We just wait. I have no idea. That's a good question. You stumped me on that one.
I didn't mean to. I didn't mean to. I'm just innately curious. Again, I do appreciate your time. This has been great. I think our audience will learn a lot about you and will come to keep track of you. I know I've done this with minor league players in affiliated ball since, goodness, the mid-1980s. Uh-huh. Find a prospect, follow their path. Along those lines, if you don't mind me asking, over the 6 or 10 years you've been at this, any star pupils that have come through and gone on to great things?
Oh, I mean, too many to count. Just people that I'll tell just, I guess, because this would be, you know, relatable to the audience here, but Luke Voit is a major league player for the Yankees right now. And I'm not going to claim taking any of his, you know, success necessarily, but just I was with him with the Cardinals in the minor leagues. And he just was always, seriously, is one of the hardest workers and just always wanting to do extra and in the weight room and in the cages and just an overwhelmingly positive and gritty attitude. And I'm just so, so thrilled. You know, to see him in the big leagues with the Yankees now. And it was a pretty cool moment to run into him in spring training and give each other a hug and go, wow, I can't believe, you know, like both of us saying congratulations to each other. Obviously just I don't believe he was a really high draft pick. I can't think of the exact round at the moment, but it's not like he came out of some star school. He was in Missouri and to see him being with the big league club, just knowing that that's a lot of hard work paying off for him. So I wouldn't, you know, he's one of the guys that I look at and I'm just like, you just love to root for someone like that because he really worked his way to the top, and being in the big leagues with the Yankees is phenomenal for him. And so it was pretty special that we got to give each other a hug and go, wow, we were both, you know, in different situations, him being in the minor leagues, I was a strength coach, and now here I am a hitting coach and he's in the big leagues with the Yankees. It's just phenomenal.
Yeah, I looked it up. 32nd round in 09 by the Royals. And then he went back when he went to school as he came out of Missouri State. 22nd round by the Cardinals in 2013. I actually saw him play for the Palm Beach Cardinals several years ago. Marco Gonzalez, who at last check was with the Seattle Mariners, actually started that game for the Redbirds against the Tampa Yankees.
Yeah, 22nd round. Like he's earned it, you know, and I just really – I have a lot of respect for him and what he's done. So he's like I said, I'm not going to claim any of his success. So just something that I've really enjoyed interacting with him over his career.
Well, I have certainly enjoyed interacting with you today. Again, I appreciate all of your time. I wish you a continued success. We will be watching your career arc. Hopefully we'll see you in the Bronx in the not too distant future.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And please stay well.
Thank you.
I'm Mark Renee. That's Rachel Balkovitz, and you're On the Mark.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.